Welcome to Business Rescue with Begbie's Trainer, the podcast designed to give you advice, reassurance and assistance if you're a business owner struggling in these times. I'm John Mellis, and as ever, I'm joined by an expert in the field of business recovery and restructuring. He's a partner at Begbie's Trainer. It's Gerald Crass. Hi, Gerald.
Hi.
I am especially looking forward to this one because we're taking a look at the world of football. Like everything else since lockdown began, it seems like ages since a ball was kicked, doesn't it?
Well, in the back garden, maybe, but nowhere else.
Gerald is ready to dazzle you with his football club control skills. We're calling this one The Integrity of the Game, Football on the Brink. And later in this podcast, we'll be delving in depth into the newly published Begbie's 2020 Annual Football Distress Report. Hot off the press, ticking a health check of the game and the clubs across the divisions up and down the country. So stay with us for more on that. It is coming up. Now, to many people, Gerald, you probably first popped up on their radar through the world of football. You've taken your skills to various clubs. I suppose the most significant story, certainly to you, because it was a labour of love, was the work that you did at Leeds United. Tell me that story.
Well, that's 15 years old, that story. And a client came to see me when Leeds were in trouble and said, what happens if they go bust? And I said, well, if they really go bust, they'll be out of the Football League, out of the Premiership, and Elland Road, their ground, will be sold. He said, that can't happen. What do we have to do? And after 30 years of telling everybody what to do, I put my own neck on the block. We raised £20 million, bought the club in a six-week episode of dealing with lawyers up to 3 o'clock in the morning. We then looked at the club before we bought it and knew what the problem was. It was £103 million in debt, a colossal figure in those days. And what we did a load of deals. We sold players because we got relegated. We were bottom when I bought it, by the way, so it's not like it was my fault. I felt as though it was. We got the debts down to about £24 million over a year. We win the championship, and I took a view with my co-directors that we'd gone as far as we could. We'd stabilised the club. We had no more money to put in, and therefore the right thing to do was find somebody who would put money in.
When you went to the club initially with your offer, how did you go from there to end up becoming chairman for that year, that period?
Well, I put together the syndicate, four clients and an outsider. And they said, how much will it cost? And I said, it'll cost you nothing. It's a labour of love. I'd rather the money stayed in the club. Instead, give me a percentage and make me chairman. And they did, because nobody else wanted to deal with the media, because we know football media especially can be very, very difficult. If I tell you that one well-known newspaper, tabloid, actually came up to Leeds and offered money to people I work with in the industry for any dirt on me.
I can well believe it.
I said, send them out to me. I'll take the money and I'll give them the story.
But never did. But it's not just the media and the newspapers. It's walking up and down the street. Every single fan is a stakeholder, a shareholder, as far as they're concerned.
I'd already moved to Newcastle by then.
So you didn't get bothered in the street?
No, but I gave up drinking for a year so that if anybody ever phoned me from the press, I was cold stone sober and really? Knew what I was saying. And wow. I went on a media training course.
Right, so you were well prepared for anything that might come your way.
Yes, but football is like an iceberg. What the fans see is the 10% above the water. It's the 90% below that if they knew what was going on, their love of football may change somewhat.
Take me inside that as far as you can, because that 90% is the controlling amount. So what are you talking about? What are you getting at there?
Greed. Agents in particular, agents have a lot to answer for. They've managed to get the phenomenal money for wages up, but some of the shenanigans between agents have surfaced in the press from time to time, where payments are made to one agent that really go to an unauthorised agent, or that a lot of a transfer fee suddenly disappears into a black hole. That money's lost to football.
This is why you're calling today's episode The Integrity of the Game, Football on the Brink, presumably.
Well, that was something that was always said to me when I was chairman. that even at the Premiership meetings and the Championship meetings, we must preserve the integrity of the game. It came out when Portsmouth and Premiership went into administration, the only Premiership club who did it. And there was a conference in the Championship to study the insolvency rules that would be applied. And the overall headline was the integrity of the game. And I'm hoping, getting out of the pandemic, we retain the integrity of the game. Into vested interests.
Do football clubs differ radically from other businesses that you rescue? I mean, presumably there's a big difference in yes. terms of scale, at least.
I used to have a couple of sayings. They don't observe the law of the land and they don't observe the law of physics. They operate in a world of their own.
A bubble.
Yes, a big bubble with lots of money in it. And money, as we know, changes things. They provide a vital service to the community. I think over the 15 years, the football clubs and certain football players are a great credit to their community and have gone out of their way compared to what it was.
When you got in at Leeds, that was on your terms. You wanted to do that job. And I imagine it differs in terms of being called in by another club, which could potentially be in worse shape. But give me an idea how your work would have a ripple effect at a football club. Do the fans rally and increase the crowd gate to help? Do they buy more gear? Do you appeal for them to help?
Yeah, Leeds was different. It was a very big club. Right from the off, we had a fans meeting every 6 months where they could ask me any question they want from the audience. I remember one fan standing up and telling me to spend £2 million. Not a lot of money then, but it was to Leeds on a certain player. And I said to him, well, how much are you putting in? I said, you want me to find £2 million of my money? How much will you give me towards it? And he looked stunned. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, nothing. I said, well, I've got things. I said, do you own a house? He said, yes. I said, well, go and borrow my house. Give me £50,000 towards it. He said, the wife let me do that. So you have this reaction with fans. And I got lots of good letters and I had a hate file as well. Later on with Bournemouth, that was my next job, which was a different type of job because that was an insolvency that went into administration, as a result of which they were relegated to Division 2, although they're now in the Premiership. And there we had a press conference and fans conference at the same time once a month. And the main problem was keeping the club afloat. And to his credit, the chairman, at 5 to 12, I went in for the press conference, knowing that I was about to announce the closure of the club. And at 4 minutes to 12, the door at the back opened, and he's waving a cheque like this to me. So I said, you'll be pleased to know we can operate for another month. He put his own money in to do that.
And, I mean, do you pressurise a chairman to try and do that in those circumstances? I mean,
That's my job. My job is, first of all, I report to the court. I'm an officer of the court. But my job is to do the best for the company, i.e. get the maximum money for its sale, which means it has to be kept afloat as a going concern. So there is pressure. There's pressure on me, which fortunately I don't feel too much, and more pressure on the directors.
Why would a chairman who has 5 minutes before a press conference that's going to wind up his club, why would a chairman let it go to 5 minutes before if he's got the money in his back pocket?
Because there were alternatives that didn't come to fruition. When you are in administration and you're going to sell a football club, you will get on day one 30 people phoning, emailing, saying they're interested. The minute you ask to see their checkbooks, 29 disappear.
And all the time that you're whirring away in the background, are managers and players receptive to you? I mean, some of those players probably realise that you're looking at the number on their head and how it would help if you could sell them.
Didn't really react with the players. That was a positive step we took. We dealt with the manager. The manager's responsible for the players. If you don't have respect with the manager, you should change him. So at Leeds, I was dealing, first of all, with Eddie Gray. And then at Bournemouth, it was Kevin Bond. And the relationship was strained because of the financial pressures. But they got on with running the team, and we got on running the club.
When you say financial pressures, were you selling players from under them in order to help the finances?
You can't sell players other than in the window, can you?
Yeah. But I mean, in those windows, we're just moving on.
Leeds, when we were relegated, we had a complete clear out almost. I mean, the wage bill was in those days 54 million a year, nothing today, but that was high in those days in the Premiership. The average in the Championship was about 10 million. So, as you can see, we had to get the wage bill down considerably. And the parachute payments were, I think, 3 million a year. So they helped, but not a lot.
So Leeds was 2004, 2005, and then you sold the club on?
Yes.
Did you have concerns when you sold the club on?
He told us, we did the deal in 3 days, to be honest.
Which is extraordinarily quick.
He didn't want to do any due diligence. He said he knew all about Leeds. he came up to Leeds with his solicitor. We worked through the night. And the next night, and then it was done on the basis he was putting £10 million in the club. Now, he was the only one who came to me with real money. I think he put £5 million in eventually, but that's another story.
you mentioned you also helped at Bournemouth in 2008 and Port Vale as well in 2012.
That was another club. I did it with one of my partners in Stoke, Bob Young. He ran the day-to-day, I ran the media. We worked well together. And that got sold. But Port Vale hasn't responded like Bournemouth. Bournemouth went from the second division to the Premiership 4 years ago. 4 years in the Premiership. Right. And I think that's more remarkable in some ways than Leicester winning the Premiership. It's as big a miracle. Bear in mind, the average gate was under 10,000 a week. And they only had three sides to a stadium. When it was busy, they'd wheel on a fourth side.
The changes that have happened.
Yeah, you football, have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, in football regulation as well over recent years, and we're talking about fair play rules, presumably situations have differed over time with regulatory changes in the game.
Things have got a lot better financially because of the new regulations. They differ from league to league. The Premiership is based on not losing more than a certain figure, depending on the year. Whereas that, by the time you get down to Division 2, wages have to be a certain percentage of revenue. But at the bottom of it is relating what you spend to what you get. So it's concentrated clubs' minds on increasing the top line, i.e. the revenue, to stay within the regulations. Now, not everybody has stayed within them, including in the Premiership.
Yeah, I'm thinking about buying players and fines resulting for the likes of Manchester City. And then the opposite end of the extreme, you've got clubs that are trying to stay afloat who can be penalised. Like
QPR, the worst case. QPR paid £30 million. I don't know whether they paid it or not.
And that's, you know, the other end of things are trying to stay afloat, like Rangers in Scotland at one point, where they were being fined for having problems.
That's a case all by itself, Rangers. That is a collapse of a major footballing nation almost. And I wouldn't take that job even if it was offered to me.
Was it offered to you?
No. But my firm were involved in investigating part of it, which I can't comment on, as a result of which claims were made. But I felt that going into Glasgow as an Englishman, if it wasn't successfully done, I may have to leave fairly quickly. Let's leave it at that.
You wouldn't be the first or the last, I suspect, Gerald. How do the fair play rules in football compare to restrictions in other businesses?
Well, can you imagine Marks and Spencer's been told how much their chairman should be paid in law? It just doesn't compare. I think other sports have something similar now. They brought it subsequently in to try and balance a level playing field and keep the integrity of the game, as they say. And it has worked. there's if you don't keep to it, you're embargoed from buying players. If you're behind with the revenue, you're embargoed. So the penalties are quite severe.
And it could impact upon you if you were having to go into a club now. I would imagine that they could make it harder for you to do your job at a club, depending on what's happened.
Well, the first problem of going into administration now is the pressures, because you're automatically almost going to be relegated. And if you're in the second division, there's only one place to go, and that's out of the Football League. And if you don't sort it out and you go into liquidation, you're thrown out. Look at Bury. They've been thrown. I know they're appealing. They won't get away with it, I don't think. But you're six leagues down in the below the conference. Well, that's a hell of a climb back.
Hot off the press is a good point to bring it in. Begbie's 2020 annual football distress report, which I assume takes a look at the clubs across the leagues up and down the country, and using your knowledge and expertise, gives those clubs a health check.
I have it here. Hot off the press this morning for both England and Scotland, which are looked at separately. I've done this through Begbie's for the last 5 years. So what we don't do is name individual clubs. That would be wrong. The only club I can name is Bury, because that's in the public arena. We look at the various leagues and compare the position at December 19 with December 18 with December 17. So you get an analysis. If anybody wants this report, if they email me on the details you give them, I'll make sure a copy is sent to them, as long as they say whether they want Scotland, England or both. And as far as England's concerned, it's been up to December 19, and I stress that date, an improvement. The new regulations are working. The Football League and the Premiership can be proud of that fact. In Scotland, it's even better. There appears to be no severe problems. That was December.
Now it was looking okay, and then dun-dun-dun.
If no you want me to tell you what my own personal... Now, this is my personal view. It's in the press release, some of it, but any views from now on are personal. And I also have to tell you, as a Leeds United fan, I'm not always 100% independent, but I've disclosed it, so read it from there. What I think is we're going to see now is that the Premiership should survive intact. I say should, it depends. When we come out of lockdown, we're not going to see crowds of 40,000 this season, and we probably may not see it next season. So we're going to have to adapt. But the financial muscle is there. But in all seriousness, just going back a step, there are at least two clubs in the Championship and up to a dozen in Division 1 or 2 that if things are not done to change the regulations for this season, could lead to insolvency.
Okay, so the two clubs in the Championship, you think, and
I'm not going to name them, but up to a dozen in Divisions 1 and 2. And they're being closely watched by me and no doubt other people. But I think the Football League needs to take some restructuring advice as to how best to deal with this scenario. Are you going to relegate 12 clubs? You know, what's going to happen? They're all going to be fighting on minus something or other next season. Mm-hmm. That's not a way to run football. That's not the integrity of the game. We may have to suspend certain regulations this season just to allow clubs generally to survive. At which point, those clubs that could survive will object, because at the end of the day, turkeys don't vote for Christmas. And to get anything changed, you need the majority of the clubs to vote in favour. And that's always the problem.
So I'm assuming it's a little bit like the retail world, this, Gerald. The real giants will survive because they've got the strength and depth in terms of funds from TV, large fan bases. They're selling merchandise, so they can soldier on. At the other end, we're almost down to amateur or part-time status. the clubs own their own grounds. They don't have too much in the way of outlay. They can probably adjust accordingly. They're used to getting by in a shoestring. But somewhere in the middle of all that, like you said, the Championship, the lower leagues, professional football in England, that's where we're looking at the potential casualties.
You're right, but don't believe that the big boys will automatically survive. Look at Virgin Airlines. Nobody can guarantee anything now. It's up to us, the population, to work together to make the recovery work, and it means everybody. Going back to your actual question, the lower leagues are going to have to come up with a slightly new business model. It may be that in order to survive, they next season play amateurs for half the team, amateur players, bring them in, keep the wage bill to a minimum until such time as we've recovered, or mainly recovered. They're going to have to run sidelines to raise commercial income. They could make masks with the club's colours on them and sell them.
I've already seen it happening.
Well, I mentioned it, I think, a few episodes ago. people at home making fashion masks. If you're in the mask business, I'd buy your shares today.
Do previous recent financial problems make clubs more susceptible to issues like the one they're facing now?
No, it should teach them a lesson. Going forward, you should always learn from your mistakes in life.
I would like to think that that was the case. I would argue that it's possibly not in the case of this club.
Away. People who are successful in business think they'll do the same in football. And the old adage, how do you make a small fortune in football, is start with a big one and work down.
Okay, let's get in our time machine. And I want you to put your neck on the line a little bit. Fast forward to the end of the 2020-2021 season. How many clubs have gone out of business in the UK in that time?
I think most of them, in one form or another, will still be around because every town wants its football club and needs it. However, some of them may have gone through a restructuring or insolvency process to get there. And my advice to the chairman of the lower leagues is speak to somebody in the restructuring business now, just to understand what may be needed. You don't have to take the advice, but if you leave it to the last moment, you know my view, when should you take advice? Yesterday.
Now, in my John in the pub type chat, part of me still believes, based on no hard evidence whatsoever, that at least one of the world giants of football, like say, for instance, a Barcelona, will crumble as if to prove that no club is invincible. A lot of the top teams, they do have a lot of debt, Gerald. Is it possible that we'll see something of that nature?
Depends if the pandemic comes back, doesn't it? That's a big unknown. We're all thinking we're coming out of lockdown and that's the end of it, but that's really the beginning of it. There are articles that maybe no vaccine will ever be found, in which case this virus is with us permanently until it kills itself off. How many years will that be?
But in terms of the huge clubs, you would think that they still represent something to a lot of money people. So even if someone moved away from the club, there'll all be, you know, Johnny Big Bucks coming in at the back.
A lot of money people are no longer money people.
That's true. They're just people.
Was a billionaire. He may now only be a multi-millionaire, we don't know. Right. He's not the only one. Yeah. People have lost absolute fortunes. We don't cry for them, because even I could manage on a few hundred million. But to them, they're going to be very wary of what they do with their remaining funds. Mm. And there's far more important investments than football, although we, the fans, don't believe it. I can't see the government coming in to bail out the Premiership with wages of $200,000-$300,000 a week for players.
You talk about the integrity of the game over the last few years. Financially, how has money flow affected the integrity of football?
Well, the fact that clubs are paying their bills is good. You can't argue that the regulations have produced a scenario where clubs are paying their way, not becoming insolvent. At one time, you would get two or three insolvencies a year within the Football League and Premiership. Now we don't get any. So that's all good. Good for the game. Quality of the game seems to have gone up. It's a lot faster, a lot more entertaining, especially in the Premiership. But we've now ground to a halt, and none of us, you know, I've given you my view today, but none of us can guarantee it.
The integrity of football, actually a good stopping off point for this week's questions. If you would like to ask Gerald a question, I'll give you the email address after we do this week's. And we start with Nick from Newcastle, who says, "Dear Mr. Krasner," obviously got a lot of respect for you, Gerald, "how will COVID-19 affect the value of many football clubs? As a staunch Newcastle United fan, what will be the effect of the Saudi Arabian takeover, and will it be okay?"
Well, that's an interesting
three question. Questions of one, that really, isn't it?
Two people will know the answer to that. Mr. Ashley and the Saudi Arabians. Before the pandemic, it was going through due process, as I understand it, fit and proper person test, and the source of the money. There was a small number of people that were objecting to the takeover on moral grounds as much as anything. It seems to have gone quiet, although everybody says it'll complete this week or next week. But maybe the Saudi Arabians are going to say, "Whoa, 350 million, it's not worth it today. We want to give you 200 million, and when football's back, we'll give you the rest." And Mr. Ashley says, "Oh, no, you won't. I want my money today." Nobody knows. I think it will have an impact. It will slow down finalisation if it happens.
Richard from London is next. I don't know if that's a Richard Branson or just another Richard. He asks, "how are football clubs in the bottom two divisions going to survive?" Well, we've kind of touched on that.
We've covered that in part, but how they're going to survive is taking advice yesterday and looking at where they can cut costs till we're back to normality, and also how much the fan base can help. What's going to happen after the end of this season, whenever it is, and the public are asked to buy next year's season tickets? That's a very big question.
And a lot of clubs are trying, in an effort to keep the money coming in, they've got the drives on to sell those season tickets now, when they don't even know when the season's going to start.
I'd want a pay-as-you-go system.
Finally, James, also from London, says, "as an average Football League supporter, what will be the effect if the season is finished?"
I presume it means voided by finish. I've covered that in part. Leeds United will have 500,000 people on the streets for testing. Liverpool will have a similar number, and maybe West Ham will be relieved. The courts will be very busy, and I think they know that. The people at the Football League and the Premiership know they've got to do something. They're just not sure how to do it. And I can understand that, because nobody knows. We've got to test these players before the match.
Don't forget, you can ask your question and we can keep your real name out of it if that is an issue, Mr. Branson. The email address is gerald@businessrestructure.co.uk. That's gerald@businessrestructure.co.uk. I'll give that to you again, plus details of where you can find us on Facebook and everywhere else in just a minute. Before that, in summary, Gerald, the football business, the perils, the solutions, the likely casualties, just to summarise, what do you envisage? What should the everyday fan and the boardroom director of a football club take away from today's show?
I think the fans should come together through supporters clubs to come up with some fundraising ideas, especially in the lower divisions. I think the authorities have to find a way to finish the season, even if it takes to August and the new season starts in October. It's not the end of the world. We can play two matches a week. And the clubs should look to their fan base and try and work and communicate and see what's what. And the players' voice should be heard.
Our thanks to Gerald for joining me on this episode of Business Rescue. As always, if you do need help, Begbie's Trainer is there for you. Experts in business restructuring as well as closure options and financial options. They have 78 offices across the UK. If your business finds itself in need of help, you can contact Gerald directly. That goes for the questions for the show as well. Gerald's email is gerald@businessrestructure.co.uk. That's Gerald, G-E-R-A-L-D, at businessrestructure, all one word that, .co.uk. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on social media as well. You can get us on Facebook at Business Rescue, Twitter at Business Rescue 6, that's the number 6, so at Business Rescue 6, and on Instagram at Business Rescue Pod. Or if you prefer to watch us, so you can really appreciate Gerald's ruggedly healthy footballer, John, we're a video version as well, which you will find on YouTube. You'll get all the links you need on our social media. Good luck with your business, and we'll see you next time on Business Rescue.